Now, Wisconsin's primaries for governor and U.S. Senate are heating up with less than a month to go before primary election day. In the Republican race for governor, businessman Tim Michaels recently won the endorsement of former Governor Tommy Thompson. Former President Donald Trump also endorsed Michaels last month. Polls now show him tied with former Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clayfish. And the Democratic primary for U.S. Senate has two frontrunners, Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes and Milwaukee Bucks executive Alex Lazary. But recent polling shows that nearly a third of Democrats are still undecided. We're talking about election news right now, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you decided who you're going to vote for in next month's primaries, either the Republican primary for governor or the Democratic race for U.S. Senate? Or are you one of the undecided voters? If so, what issues are you looking to hear about? What's important to you in this year's elections? And do you have questions about how we can vote after a Supreme Court ruling banning ballot drop boxes? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Barry Burden is a professor of political science at UW-Madison and director of the Elections Research Center. Barry, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks. Glad to be back.
Well, I want to start off with talking about the Wisconsin Elections Commission and this ballot drop box guidance. After the Supreme Court ruling last week, we just heard new comments today from Commission Administrator Megan Wolf about drop boxes and mailboxes. What's happening? Can you get us caught up?
This feels like a constant process in Wisconsin of court decisions and changes in rules. The latest is the Wisconsin Supreme Court ruling from Friday, which says that drop boxes, at least the unmanned drop boxes that a voter might use to deposit their absentee ballot, are not legal in the state, and that a person may not deliver a ballot for someone else unless they're appointed as an agent, maybe because the person has a disability or is hospitalized. The court did not reach a decision on whether a person could put another voter's ballot in the mail for them, but that is where Administrator Wolf weighed in today, recommending that voters don't do that, but also suggesting that they talk to their local clerks if they have questions. My guess is that clerks across the state will be implementing the decision from the Supreme Court somewhat differently, depending on where they are. There remain, unfortunately, some gray areas in exactly how this all works.
And the Wisconsin Elections Commission is still technically deadlocked after trying to take some votes on new guidance to local clerks. Barry, do we have a sense of how widespread and how heavily used those drop boxes were in the last election?
Well, we know there were hundreds of them in 2020. I think the Elections Commission had reported something between 500 and 600 drop boxes in use in nearly every county across the state. Certainly in big cities, they got attention, but they're also used in lots of rural communities, small towns and villages, where clerks often don't have offices or don't have staff, and so the drop box was helpful to them. Those are now all going to be padlocked or removed and not used. We don't know, unfortunately, exactly how many ballots came through those drop boxes. It's not something that is systematically recorded, though I think anecdotal evidence was that it was not trivial. There were a number of voters who found them really convenient, and election officials were actually encouraging voters to use them if they were concerned that the mail might not get the ballot back in time.
And Barry, I know you did a study of election clerks after the 2020 election. How do they feel about drop boxes?
Yeah, I conducted a survey last year and asked clerks, about 700 of them who answered the survey, what policy they thought was best for drop boxes. There were several options ranging from, I don't think they should be permitted at all, which is now the new determination of the Supreme Court, to I think they should actually be mandated. Every jurisdiction should have one. Only about 22% of clerks, so a little less than one in four, thought that drop boxes ought to be banned, ought to be prohibited. So that's a minority view among election officials. It's now the policy. Among the other three quarters of clerks, opinion was pretty divided. Some of them would allow it, but not mandate it. Some would mandate it. Some would put a maximum of just one box per municipality. So there were a variety of views on exactly how many ought to be deployed, what the upper limits ought to be. But most clerks were actually in favor of letting it happen.
And just before we get into the governor's race, Barry, I want to ask, this Supreme Court ruling from Friday that declared drop boxes illegal in future elections, did that say anything about ballots cast in drop boxes in previous elections. Did it make any, you know, statements about those being fraudulent or problematic in any way?
No, it's only a forward-looking decision. It says no drop boxes from here on out, and that includes the August 9th primary that's coming up, and in the general election in November. The drop box issue, along with a lot of other issues related to absentee ballots, was litigated after the 2020 presidential election. There were something like six or seven suits filed in state and federal court in Wisconsin, as you may remember, and none of those determined that the absentee ballots from drop boxes or collection in parks or just about any other means ought to be set aside. So this is really just a prohibition going forward.
We're talking with Barry Burden, professor of political science at UW-Madison and director of the Elections Research Center, talking about election guidance news, and we're now getting into the governor's race. Let's talk about that race, which has shifted quite a bit here in recent weeks. The Republican primary for governor has two front runners right now. Barry, what are you seeing in terms of the GOP race for governor?
Well, I agree with you that it's two candidates at the top. That's Tim Michaels, who recently entered the race, comes from the business community, running his own construction company. And Rebecca Clayfish, who has been in the race for many months, is a familiar face because she was lieutenant governor for 8 years under Scott Walker. Clayfish and had been the leader, I think, by all accounts. She had the most endorsements. She was the establishment candidate. She was leading fundraising over the other lesser-known Republicans. But Michaels has really shaken up the race. The latest Marquette poll from a few weeks ago shows them essentially tied in the primary, though many Republican voters remain undecided. Each of them was sitting at about 26% of the likely vote. So this one feels as though it's up for grabs. The opening bit mentioned that Michaels has gotten endorsements from Donald Trump and Tommy Thompson, two important leaders in the party, two very different kinds of leaders in the party. But Clayfish has the support of former Governor Scott Walker, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, and many other legislative leaders. So the party is really divided between these two candidates at the moment.
One issue that has come up on the campaign trail is the ongoing investigation of the 2020 election here in Wisconsin and the idea of decertifying the 2020 election, pulling back Wisconsin's electors. Republican candidate Tim Michaels was recently asked about an effort to do that. Here's his response to WKOW-TV.
You know, I have to work with the legislature and see what these bills look like. As a businessman, I just don't say that I'll do this or I'll do that. It's always about the details.
And as most election law experts have said, there's not really any pathway to decertify an election. Barry, what do you make of this issue continuing to come up in Michaels' comments?
Yeah, there really is no pathway. It's a settled issue, and I think Rebecca Clayfish has said as much when she was asked the question. She wanted to look forward, not back, on these kinds of issues. You know, I think both of the leading candidates, really all Republicans running for office today, feel pretty intense pressure to show that they have deep concerns about the 2020 election, that they are doubtful that the election was proper. Donald Trump has weighed in, I think, a couple of times since Friday's Supreme Court decision, putting pressure on Robin Voss and others to do something, to change the laws, to do more investigations. So I think the Republican candidates will continue to be asked about this, both by journalists and by their supporters. And their positions, frankly, have been evolving. I think both Michaels and Clayfish have become more openly skeptical, maybe more aggressive in wanting to take on what happened in 2020 as the campaign has rolled on.
And how much of keeping that idea at least alive has to do with the favor of former President Trump?
Well, it's important. I think all of the Republican candidates, certainly these two who are in the lead, made a trip to Mar-a-Lago to visit Trump. They wanted his endorsement. When Tommy Thompson was thinking about getting into the race, he also traveled to Florida. Tim Rampton, who's one of the lesser-known candidates, an all-out supporter of decertifying the election, also made the trip and was hoping to get Trump support. So it's a huge element. It's not something that the candidates feel like they can ignore. And, you know, I think suspicions about the election or beliefs in the big lie are really animating a core element within the party. And so, you know, they're hearing it at Republican events around the state, and I think feel obligated to address it.
Are you seeing other differentiating issues, policy issues right now between Clayfish and Michaels?
It's hard to find much separation between them. They've certainly been asked about abortion and contraception since the Dobbs decision came from the U.S. Supreme Court overturning Roe v. Wade. I think they've ended up in very similar positions, wanting to enforce the law from 1849 that essentially makes abortion illegal in Wisconsin, but not wanting to go so far as to ban contraception. There may be a sort of gray area about morning after pills or other kinds of things. But really on that issue and lots of other hot button issues, there aren't many differences. There, you know, on election matters, I think there's some small differences between them about whether they would disband the Wisconsin Elections Commission or replace the commissioners or reallocate the authority there. That too is a set of evolving positions. But both the Republicans running for governor and the Democrats who are running for Senate are really quite similar to one another.
Disbanding the Wisconsin Elections Commission is something that a lot of Republican candidates have talked about. You mentioned a few of the ideas for what could come next if that happens. What are your thoughts, your concerns about the potential for a post-elections commission landscape?
Well, I'm not a fan of the design of the Elections Commission. It was created only 7 years ago and modeled after the Federal Elections Commission, which governs campaign finance in Washington. That too is a commission of three Republicans, three Democrats, and it mostly deadlocks. It's a really ineffective agency, unable to enforce campaign finance law because the three members of each party can't agree on much. And we've seen that play out in the Elections Commission. It replaced what I think was a much better model, which was the Government Accountability Board. It was in place for a small number of years until 2005. It was made up of former judges with no partisan attachments, and I thought worked quite well. But Republicans in the legislature and Governor Walker were distrustful of the GAB, disbanded it, replaced it with the Wisconsin Elections Commission. Now we're hearing Republicans say they don't trust the commission in various ways, and they want to potentially replace the commissioners or the commission itself. So it's not clear what kind of setup would be satisfactory to Republicans who are unhappy with the 2020 election result. I think it's really worrisome that politicians are meddling in what ought to be either a nonpartisan or a bipartisan effort to administer elections in the state.
We're talking with Barry Burden, professor of political science at UW-Madison and director of the Elections Research Center, catching up on the primary race for governor. In just a bit, we'll get into the primary race for U.S. Senate on the Democratic side. We want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What's bringing you out to the polls in next month's primary election? Maybe inflation, abortion access, another issue? What are you looking out for right now? Do you feel like candidates are talking about the issues you care enough about? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation, hear from you, coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Dean Knetter, in for Rob Ferret. We're taking a look at the races for governor and U.S. Senate in Wisconsin with about a month until primary election day. Barry Burden with UW-Madison's Election Research Center stays with us. Barry, what do we know about the potential matchups in the general election, how Governor Evers would do against the candidates running for the GOP primary?
Well, we do have limited polling data about this. The Marquette poll has really been the only survey firm out there asking these kinds of questions. The Marquette poll from June showed a really close race in any matchup between Evers and one of the Republicans. Most of their breakdowns show Evers slightly ahead by a point or two or three. I think it's fair to say that those are all probably toss-up races. That's not going to surprise any listeners who have followed recent Wisconsin elections, the last two presidential elections, the governor's race 4 years ago that Evers won. All of those were essentially 1 point or in some cases less. I think we're in that territory for the governor's race again.
And important to recognize that there are still a lot of undecided voters out there, still a lot of time toward the general election, right?
Oh, there's a lot of learning going on right now. Voters are really just tuning in. Voting is underway in the primary. Absentee ballots are out, and we're going to see more attention, more advertising, candidate debates and forums and other things happening over the next few weeks. But mostly these primary candidates are unknown to much of the electorate and won't become known until the fall, till we get into September and October. People get back into thinking about campaign season. I think there's a lot of time for these races to firm up.
I want to turn now to the Democratic primary for the U.S. Senate seat that would take on U.S. Senator Ron Johnson. I also want to go to the phones right now. We have Art in Milwaukee with us. Hi, Art.
Hi. So I'm a supporter of Mandela Barnes. One, I think he best represents the people of Wisconsin as opposed to millionaires. But the Marquette poll also shows that he's leading among independents. And even though the Lazary ads imply that Lazary would be the strongest to beat Ron Johnson, the Marquette poll shows Lazary is the only one of the major candidates on the Democratic side behind Ron Johnson. So I encourage people to take a good look at Mandela Barnes and give him support.
Art, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Art talking about current Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes and Milwaukee Bucks executive Alex Lazary. Barry, what are you looking out for in the Democratic primary there?
Well, this is a fluid race, I think maybe more fluid than the Republican side. Alex Lazary was really unknown to the public 6 months ago, but has become known because of his own spending. He's really invested in advertising and gotten himself close to parity with Mandela Barnes, at least in the polls. Sarah Godlewski has some traction as well. I think Tom Nelson is probably fourth on that list, not faring quite as well, but still in the mix. Again, there's gonna be a lot of learning about these candidates over the next couple of weeks, and we may see some movement. There are still some endorsements out there that may be snagged by some of them, maybe some gaffes by some of the candidates that will get them in trouble or some other kind of viral moments. So I think this one is still really up for grabs.
And as Art mentioned, he's concerned with who can beat Senator Ron Johnson. And that is something I think that the candidates are focusing on too in their election messaging. What kind of position are they carving out? What kind of things are they saying about the senator that tells us how their general election campaign might go?
Yeah, I think the vulnerability of Ron Johnson is really driving this race. There are eight Democrats on the ballot, four or five who are in the top group. That's a long list of candidates to run against an incumbent in a year that is likely to be very good for his party. This is going to be probably a strong showing for Republicans this fall. The fact that so many Democrats have hopped into the race indicates that they think Johnson is beatable. And Johnson, I think, has largely done that to himself. He's a controversial figure, made some statements that I think are out of the mainstream about public health and climate change and the election and Joe Biden and Joe Biden's family and other things. His ratings in the Marquette poll are now more negative than they've ever been. Now, he's pulled off two previous elections as an underdog. I'm not sure I would call him an underdog in this race. I think it's pretty even, or maybe he's a slight favorite. But the Democrats at least think he is beatable. And that's a pitch all of them are making, that they are the ones who could take him down in the general election.
And the latest Marquette polling, I believe, was done before the Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe v. Wade. And in the wake of that, President Biden and other Democrats have said, hey, use this as a reason to vote in November. Barry, is that something that you're going to be looking at as a potential energizer for Democrats?
Yeah, I think that's a really important moving piece in all of this. It's hard to say what it will look like in November, but at the moment, I think Democrats are animated by the abortion issue. They're obviously concerned and unhappy with what the Supreme Court has done. They would like to build their majority in the U.S. Senate and overturn the filibuster, or at least for the purposes of changing abortion policy. Joe Biden has said he's open to that, and Ron Johnson is in their way to making that happen. So I think Democrats hope and believe that abortion will be one of the things that fuels their success this fall.
Time for one more caller. We have Louie with us in Oconto. Hi, Louie.
Yes, I'm really excited about the U.S. Senate race and with our four candidates that are kind of leading the charge there. I really wish there was more coverage on that race going into the primary. And I really like the first candidate that announced, Tom Nelson. He's been probably the most visible out there meeting the people. And I hope people find that out about him. He really cares and listens to the people. So that's a good plus for him, I think.
Gotcha. Louis, thanks for the call. Barry, how much do you think can change in that Democratic Senate primary between now and August 9th?
Well, as the caller mentioned, this has been sort of a sleepy race. Even though it's a very important U.S. Senate seat, it's a competitive primary, it hasn't gotten the same attention as on the Republican side. I think that's because the Democrats have been nicer to one another. It hasn't been the kind of hostility that you've seen between Michaels and Clayfish and Nicholson when he was in the race on the Republican side. They may get a little tougher with one another as we get into the final days. It'll be all or nothing as they get close to August 9th. And so I would expect media coverage to pick up and voters to be energized as well.
And in our last minute, Barry, what are you watching for, keeping an eye on as we get closer to primary day?
Well, I think one thing to keep our eye on in thinking about the general election is what is the relative turnout in the Democratic primary for Senate versus the Republican primary for governor? Do we see more R's or more D's showing up in August? That'll be a sign as to the relative enthusiasm and energy in the two parties going into November. It's not a perfect indicator, but I think it's one sign as to whether the Republicans are going to be able to take advantage of the national environment that's working in their favor, or Democrats might have some surprising success in Wisconsin.
I'm sure we'll talk again. Barry, thank you for joining us.
Glad to be with you again. Thanks.
That was Barry Burden, professor of political science at UW-Madison, getting us caught up on the latest election news.